Tonight, as part of WBEZ's series, Chicago Matters, Questions of Faith, we present a special documentary called The Fire Within, Islam in Prison. The program was produced by Cecilia Weissman and Katie Davis, and narrated by Katie Davis. And now, The Fire Within, Islam in Prison.
I was in a dorm, laying in a bed, and asleep. And the guys were out in the day room watching TV, and I heard a voice tell me that it was time for Islamic services. It says, it's time for Islamic services, wake up. So I thought somebody was playing with me, you know. So I looked around and nobody was around. And I went back to sleep, and this was on a Friday. And the next week, I was asleep again at around the same time, and nobody was in the dorm room except me. And same thing. It's time for Islamic services, and this time the get up part was real loud to me. And so I saw, you know, I kind of jumped up, looked up under the beds and stuff, you know, because I figured somebody's playing around with me. So I went out. And I asked the guard, did he call Islamic services? You know, because I figured maybe he called it, you know, on a speaker or something, you know. And he said, no, but I was about to.
More and more African Americans, as many as 2 million, are hearing that call, a call to search, to reevaluate their spirituality. For some, the call reaches behind walls, behind gates, to prison, where silence can make a man's hearing more acute. And Islam can enter that silence and offer hope and a way to remake a broken life. In America, the Muslim faith is often misunderstood. It's identified with titanic names, names like Elijah Muhammad, Malcolm, Farrakhan. But there are hundreds of thousands of Georges, Jims, and Johnnies who are Muslim, who practice the traditional faith, or Orthodox Islam, one with no ties to Louis Farrakhan or the Nation of Islam. Most Muslims in this country practice traditional Islam, with prayers in Arabic and the Quran as a spiritual guide. Go to Lincoln, Illinois, to the Logan Correctional Center, a medium-security prison of red brick buildings and squat hedges. On a sunny day, you have to shield your eyes from the glinting razor wire that crests in waves on top of the 20-foot fences.
K-1386, K-13106.
My name is George Pryor. My Islamic name is Shadid Mumin El-Amin, which stands for Strong Believer in the Trustworthy. I converted to Islam in May of 1995, the exact date I'm not sure of. I've been in and out of the penitentiary. Well, this makes my eighth time. But, you know, it petty crimes, theft and things like, and it all had to do with my drug addiction. And, you know, I had jobs. I had a job when I got arrested at this. I was a custodian at John Deere. And when I got arrested and got booked in and all this, you go up, you get assigned your cell, and I went to my cell. And, you know, every time you go to jail, you say to yourself, I'm a change, you know. But for some reason, I said I'm a change, and I kept having the thought that I had to change my religion too, you know. And for some reason, I just said to myself, I'm going to find Islam.
George Pryor will tell you, when you get to prison, there are choices to make, how you spend your time and who with.
The other times in the penitentiary, to stay busy, like I said, I'd play handball, lift weights, If I wasn't doing that, I'd play cards, dominoes, you know, always something to do, pool, whatever. And right now, like, I used to love pool, you know, and I hardly ever shoot pool anymore.
About 10% of the Logan prison population, some 100 prisoners, are practicing Muslims. Like all inmates, they must share a cell, work a job, and stand for count 5 times a day. But there are discernible differences. Among the Muslims, shirts are ironed, jeans are clean and creased, and their talk, unlike the banter that bounces off the walls here, is soft and measured.
On Fridays when I didn't work or anything, and I'd look out my window and I'd see them with their prayer rugs over their shoulders, their Qurans. I didn't know what the rug stood for at the time, you know. I'd see them every Friday. They'd be making their way up that sidewalk, and they just stood out from everybody else. You know, they didn't talk a bunch of crazy talk. It seemed like everyone else looked at him, you know, as far as to give them advice. They had a peace about themselves.
Now on Fridays, George Pryor walks to midday Juma, or communal prayers, with the certainty of a new believer. His Quran or holy book is wrapped in a white towel, prayer rug over his shoulder.
I find a lot of the brothers, they come to me for it, you know, and ask me questions now. And it feels great. Somebody's asking you for something, some advice that's positive, instead of, you know, some little scheme or, you know, you're conniving or something. It's a different shoe now, you know, that I'm wearing. So it feels great.
A green and gold embroidered kufi perches on George Pryor's close-cropped hair. Prison officials allow Muslims to wear these small caps and to take time away from work or school to pray. And twice a week, they bring in a Muslim chaplain to conduct services. All this, says the warden, promotes worship and can be a way to fend off what he calls the chaos in prison.
As-salamu alaykum.
17 pairs of high-top basketball shoes pile up by the doorway to the room of prayer. The men position their rugs to the east. Out the windows, watchtowers crowd the horizon. George Pryor stands, his palms pressed to his ears and temples, to lead a prayer in Arabic, which he now spends his free time studying.
Ashhadu anna Muhammad ar-Rasulullah. Hayya la salah, hayya la halal falah.
Take your time. Get it right.
When George falters, he's encouraged by the imam, or Muslim chaplain, who ministers to the inmates. The imam is a compact, burly man, but surprisingly agile, as he kneels, stands, kneels again, and places his forehead to the floor. Muslim chaplains were first hired by state prisons over 20 years ago, after inmates fought for recognition of Islam and the right to worship.
My name is Johnny Shabazz, and I have been at Logan Institution going on my 18th year now. One thing that we teach as Muslims is that, and especially for the African-American people, we teach that this cry for freedom, you already have freedom. God made you free. Man cannot enslave you unless you want to be enslaved.
Johnny Shabazz, like many African-American Muslims, grew up in the Christian church. The son of a Baptist minister in Taylor, Texas, he was never comfortable with what he was taught in Sunday school. And this led him to question, to search.
I just became disgruntled, period, with the church, because I'm the type of a person that if I believe in something, I like to go all the way. And I walked out of the church and became a gambler.
I gambled away a family, says Johnny Shabazz, and then just drifted. In 1959, though, he came across a newspaper with the writings of Elijah Muhammad, the man who led the Nation of Islam. The message was arresting. It told African Americans to love their blackness, to celebrate it. And this was 1959, the earliest days of the civil rights movement.
I remember when I was a child going to Sunday school, the devil was always a little black fellow with red eyes and a pitchfork and so forth and so on. Then the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, he says, no, the black man is God, the white man is the devil. You see, so that was a reverse psychology, and it came at a time when the esteem in the black race as a whole was very low, and it began to build self-esteem even into those who did not accept the teachings of Elijah. If you notice that, especially after Malcolm came on the scene, the word black became a badge of honor.
For more than 10 years, Johnny Shabazz was a dedicated member of the Nation of Islam. And with fellow ministers, including Malcolm X and Louis Farrakhan, he traveled the country to preach black nationalism. Conflicts emerged, though, among black Muslims when Elijah Muhammad died in 1975. His son took over and led Muslims away from black nationalism and toward Orthodox Islam. A smaller number followed Louis Farrakhan, who continued to emphasize racial differences. In the end, most black Muslims chose the Islam that millions practice worldwide, an inclusive one, one which says God has no color, black or white, and no physical image. And that idea remains a powerful lure for most African Americans discovering Islam today. Inmate Jim Jones is in the front row at the Friday prayer service this day. Like Chaplain Johnny Shabazz, 48-year-old Jim Jones was brought up a Baptist in the South, in Mississippi, just 8 miles from the town where young Emmett Till was beaten to death in 1955 after being accused of whistling at a white woman.
For someone to stick this image on the cross, this blonde-haired guy with blue eyes, and for them to tell me, this is my God, and tell me to get down on my knees and pray to him, well, if this is my God, why are you killing me? Everybody that looks like you are beating me to death, they're killing me, and you want me to submit? No, that just didn't work. But I believe that. But then in Islam, it taught me that we, as human beings, we can't dare to perceive what God may look like in our pea brains.
Listen to Jim Jones' story for a while, and you wonder, why is this man in prison? For most of his life, he had a good job, driving an 18-wheel truck cross-country. He owned his own home, had a wife and children. Look at his face, though, at the scars etched under his watery eyes, at his wrists strafed with needle marks. He explains that he lost his job in 1983, and then he thought he'd make some extra money selling drugs, but instead became his own best customer, cocaine and heroin, for 9 years, and then 2 stints in prison.
I know what narcotic does to you, you know. I know what they do. It destroys you. Not only you as a person, but it destroys your family also. Because you take everybody that loves you with you. When you come to the penitentiary, you bring your entire family with you. When you suffer, they suffer, your kids. You know, they don't hold their head very high, they're not very proud of their dad. You know, they say, well, hey, my father's in jail, you know, because he used drugs and he's driving a stolen motor vehicle. That doesn't look so good to a kid. So it's not a nice picture.
Jim Jones converted to Islam the first time he was in prison in 1989. But when he got out, he says he did not practice his faith. Jim violated his parole, started doing drugs again, and stopped going to work. For a year, he was on the run from the law before getting locked up again. This time, he says he's doing things differently. He chose to enter a rigorous drug program in prison and plans now to rely on both his understanding of addiction and his faith in Islam.
I pray that I'll be a better person in the future than I've been in the last 8 years. Put it like that. The last 8 years has been it's been like a war, tug of war within me and society itself. You know, some views that I had, you know, I had to change those views. I was very good at blaming everyone for my own faults. You know, I've come to deal with that, and I can take responsibility for myself today that I wasn't able to take a year ago. I've been locked up for a year and 2 days today. So things that I know now, I couldn't see it at the time because I wasn't very critical of myself. Today, I know how to be critical of James.
Talk to other Muslim inmates and they'll confirm it's not easy. One longtime Muslim who often leads services at Logan was released and committed armed robbery. Now he's back in prison serving 25 years. There is no clear evidence to show whether belief in Islam or any religion keeps someone from returning to prison. But Islam is practical, and lessons can be learned.
Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah. Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah.
At sunset, around 60 Muslim inmates gather on the prison basketball court. Four guards keep a careful eye on this large gathering, unusual for this time of day.
Now we break the fast with the provisions provided by you. Amen.
These inmates sip fluorescent orange Kool-Aid, their first drink or food since before dawn. After prayer, the prison will serve them a special meal. Everyone else at the prison has already eaten. This is the month-long fast of Ramadan, a time that challenges believers to test themselves. A handful of inmates drop out before the end of the fast. It's harder than you think, one explains.
No talking, please. All laughing cease. Get your concentration together.
They arrange their prayer rugs in rows behind the foul line and stand side by side facing Chaplain Johnny Shabazz.
All ye who believe, fasting is prescribed to you as it was prescribed to those before you, that ye may learn self-restraint. So we have been practicing self-restraint. At least I pray Allah that you have been practicing self-restraint and that we have learned over the past few days that we can control our passions.
Believe me, it's a lot of evil going on right here. You don't have to go outside. This is a world within a world. They have the same things in here that they have in the outside world. Because, you know, we're criminals, and so dealing with criminals, they plus their means. Men have minds. And if you can think of a way to stop me, I can think of a way to get around you. It's simple. It's going to be drugs here. It's going to be gambling. Because man has the ability to think.
So therefore, Allah gives us the fast to know that we have the control.
God talks about he created a fire that is smoke-free. And most people say, well, how can you create a fire that's smoke-free? And he goes on to explain to us what that fire is. And I suppose both of you are probably an experienced and probably said it many times in your life that, wow, I was so hot with that individual, I have to walk away and cool off. It's the fire within him. It's the fire within that caused you to rage, that ego. And you have to learn to control it in situations. And I test that here.
Jim Jones will be able to test himself on the outside. This spring he was released. He says, I think I'll be able to resist the drugs, to keep away from my running buddies, and to kneel in prayer 5 times a day. Those things Jim feels somewhat sure of. But he knows there are other obstacles.
It's basically like I got 4 kids, okay? My youngest son, he had no idea. But I wasn't involved in any of his school activities, okay? And he was a star wrestler at Rich Central. He was a star wrestler, All-State. I wasn't there. So, you know, I missed all those things. It was a star football player. So he often wondered where was I at? I was never there. Never. So it's like mending the fence with him, because when I talk with him now, he's the type of guy, he doesn't talk to me. You know, he answers questions. He don't give me any information on his life. So I have to deal with that. That's a great concern. And trying to tell him, I don't know, I'm gonna tell him sooner or later, you know, that hey, 9 years, you know, I was a dope fiend, so what can I do? I can't unchange that. The bail has been wrong. There's nothing I can do about that. I have to try to go on, you know.
A cat. It's a her.
It's easy for a person to be involved in a religious type atmosphere when he doesn't have other obligations, friends and family and things like that, because you don't have anything to do but study and pray and just eat and exercise and things like that when you're incarcerated. But when you come home, that's when the big test hits.
Kevin Pinkney knows. He left prison 5 years ago, a newly converted Muslim hoping to build a life. He was given the address of the nearest mosque by Chaplain Johnny Shabazz, But for the most part, the Muslim community leaves ex-cons on their own after prison. Kevin Pinkney says many times, as he got married, had children, and pulled a foreman shift at a Ford assembly line, many times he came face to face with his old life, the one that landed him in prison, a life of drug deals and handling stolen goods. It's there all the time, says Kevin Pinkney. What matters is what you do with it.
Al-Islam helped me to be strong enough to stay away from certain things. And when I say stay away, I walked into a room one time at a guy's house, and he told me to go in there. He said, go in that room in there. He said, my little brother's in there. Just go in there. And I opened the door, and his little brother was in there, and they had drugs and a whole lot of guns. And I turned around, and I came out. He said, man, I got to get out of this house. That's what he told me. I said, yeah, because I'm leaving right now. Because I don't even want to be in the house with them, you know. But that was bad news. But if you can't do something about it, and God tells us this in the Holy Quran, he says, truly spacious is my earth, you know. So seek the bounty of Allah. So if you can't get, you've tried, if you can't get the peace and satisfaction where you are, then you should move. You should leave. If it means leaving the block, leaving the neighborhood, leaving the country, you know, you have the whole world available to you. And you could try somewhere else.
For Kevin Pinkney, Chicago seems to be working. He bought a graystone in Hyde Park and is renovating it. Plaster dusts the tiles in the hall, leading to the wooden floors, which are irresistible runways for the Pinkney's three children.
I'll swing you around in a few minutes, babe. But anyway, this is Aaliyah. She just made 3 years old. You gonna say hi? No? And this is Ariel.
That's the tenor of life. Family, work, a sense of peace and security. That's the life that Jim Jones longs for. In Logan prison, he started moving toward that. The trick, he says, is to not slip back.
So I think I can deal with this. I don't know. I don't know yet. You know, the test is still to come. And I just hope I have enough to work with. I know that if I don't, I'm going to lose. I'm going to lose big time, because if I have to come back this way again, it's over with. You know, I'm 49 years old this year, so I can't come this way again.
الحمد لله رب العالمين الرحمن الرحيم مالك يوم الدين إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين اهدنا الصراط المستقيم صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين
The Fire Within, Islam in Prison, was produced by Cecilia Weissman and Katie Davis. The editor was Gary Covino. The audio producer was Mary Gaffney. Special thanks to Ajin Muhammad, Zubaydah Madyun, and Abdul Alim Bashir. This program was presented as part of WBEZ's special series, Chicago Matters, Questions of Faith. The executive producer is Johanna Zorn. Chicago Matters is funded by the Chicago Community Trust and is a joint project of WBEZ, Channel 11, and the Chicago Public Library. As Chicago's community foundation, the Trust helps concerned citizens put charitable dollars to work for the benefit of our community. This is WBEZ, Chicago.